This is an RNIB Connect Radio podcast.
You're listening to RNIB Connect Radio. Beth O'Brien is an author, poet, and the founder of Disabled Tales, a website which explores and discusses disabled characters in folklore and fairy tales. In part one of this two-part interview, she's here to discuss how Disabled Tales began as a project and their upcoming symposium taking place on the 24th and 25th of February. Hi Beth, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
So can you give us the background into Disabled Tales and how you started?
So I'm doing a PhD in fairy tales and specifically looking at disability representation within traditional fairy tales, but also how modern fairy tale adaptations use or change that disability representation. And nearly three years ago now, I had an idea of starting a website where predominantly disabled creators, whether that's artists, poets, fiction writers, or even essayists, can submit their work that speak to this theme. And part of me thought, oh, it's a bit niche, maybe it's a bit too niche, but actually it's been so enthusiastically embraced by such a diverse range of people in terms of the countries people have submitted from and in terms of disability and the fairy tales they've reinterpreted. It's sort of gone from strength to strength because of those people. So I'm really glad I started it, but I definitely can't take credit for the fact that it's become what it is, because it, yeah, very much has been embraced by writers and artists, which has been incredible.
And how is disability in general represented in fairy tales?
So the reason I picked fairy tales is because disability is very prevalent. There's a lot of disability representation compared to, I would say, most other genres of literature. But the complicating aspect of that is that it's not always the most positive, because disability traditionally has been inflicted on characters as a punishment, or else sort of given to a, all the quotes, good character as a barrier for them to overcome and ultimately cure. So those are probably the main tropes, I would say, but they are not employed across the board totally. So there are exceptions to this. And I think what I have noticed through studying fairy tales is that how disability is used is often for a moralizing purpose. So for the Grimm brothers, it was to enforce or highlight Christian values. My go-to example for this is normally that in Cinderella, for example, it isn't till their second edition, the Grimm brothers' second edition of their fairy tales, that the Cinderella's stepsisters have their eyes pecked out by doves. That was added in to sort of make it clearer that they were being punished with the religious symbol of the dove for their wickedness. So I think it's really interesting to examine how disability is used. And what the symposium is hopefully going to do is look at how we can sort of keep those historic moments of those characters who have endured through storytellers and for like centuries and centuries, keep those characters, but sort of confront some of the more negative or outdated representations that we'd rather move past at this point.
And what about sight loss specifically? How does that appear in fairy tales?
I think that there is just a lot more room to progress in this area, because in terms of sight loss specifically, there aren't many that I can really give you. And I was asked quite recently for a reading list to recommend to someone, not even fairy tales, but just generally sight loss or even and partial sightness in literature. And it's not where I'd like it to be. Within literature, the representation of sight loss is overwhelmingly total blindness, which, using the RNIB's own statistic, 97% of people with sight loss have some usable vision. So I am forever intrigued by the fact that literature really doesn't reflect that nuance at all. And it came to my attention through my own writing, really, because I was thinking about the fairy tale Red Riding Hood. And this has ended up being the basis for my own first novel. Red Riding Hood, firstly, I began thinking, okay, it's a bit like her mum's very insistent. She takes one path through the woods. And it is a bit strange that she doesn't recognise that her grandmother's been replaced by a wolf. And that sort of was a spark for me in terms of thinking, yeah, it's true that partial sight loss is very rarely presented in literature. And this Red Riding Hood example is one of the few instances I could think of. And I don't think many people have considered it in that way. I definitely hadn't. But once you do, a lot of the story makes sense. I suppose it was a good catalyst for thinking, okay, we can think about these old stories in new ways all the time. And for me, it sort of was a jumping off point. I also think a lot about the prince in Rapunzel who is blinded by the witch, and he is ultimately cured, but for a time he sort of wanders around because he can't see, and he follows the sound of Rapunzel's voice. And again, in terms of negative stereotypes, it was very much blindness associated with sadness. But I began thinking, what if you could just tell that story and maybe the prince is always blind? Maybe he isn't blinded. I've just found it interesting to consider how we can keep the disability representation that exists in these old stories, but turn them into something a bit more positive or nuanced. It doesn't even, for me, have to be positive. I would just like these characters to be seen as rounded people rather than sort of defined by this one character trait that happens to be their disability. Not to just point you to Disabled Tales, but that website has been incredible for the way some of the traditional or harmful aspects of a fairy tale have sort of been either changed or updated to speak to someone's actual experience. Publishing has improved massively in terms of its amount of disability representation. And for example, one of the books I'm looking at for my PhD is A Curse So Dark and Lonely by Bridget Camara, which is a Beauty and the Beast retelling with a protagonist with cerebral palsy. So that is an incredible addition of disability to a story that didn't originally have that.
And the symposium will be a great way for people to discuss disability representation in fairy tales and retellings going forward. What kind of discussions do you have planned over the 2 days?
The abstracts that were submitted for the symposium were so incredible. And we've sort of divided the symposium into four parts. And the first part, we're looking at collaboration and empowerment. So looking at the representation and how we'd analyse these fairy tales just more on a textual level and seeing what messages are being put out there when you look at disabled people specifically. And we're hoping to look at educational settings. And we've got some speakers talking about tools to use within a classroom setting for using fairy tales in an inclusive way to support disabled students rather than using them and them becoming more alienated because of that. And then some talks on retellings and the pros and cons that this can have, because it brings up issues of its own, but can also be really rewarding. And then our final session is on moving forward. So we've sort of identified some of the problems that we are finding within this sphere and what can we do going forward, and what is already out there, and what groups can you approach to further your interest in this sort of thing. So that's the plan, and we're trying to make obviously the event as accessible as possible, and they're also on board with that, and I think it will be a really good event.
And you're looking for contributions from disabled people as well about their experiences of fairy tales ahead of the symposium. What kind of thing are you looking for, and how can people get in touch?
Yeah, so if you go to www.disabledtales.co.uk, you can find all the information there, and we are always open to hear from disabled people on how or not they felt seen or depicted in fairy tales. Some people really identify with them, some people have found it more challenging but have found quite rewarding in almost being given the prompt to take a fairy tale that they didn't like and turn it into something that is more empowering for them. So we have a submissions page on our website, and that details all of the criteria in terms of if you want to submit a story or poetry or an essay. You can just literally send an attachment. I don't need it to be a formal letter. I know that puts some people off having to meet a lot of criteria.
And finally, can you remind us when the symposium is taking place and how people can book tickets and find out more?
Yes, the symposium will take place on the 24th and 25th of February. It's 2 afternoon sessions. You can book your tickets by going to our website, which again is www.disabledtales.co.uk, going to the symposium page, and there is a button at the bottom that says book your place here, and it will take you to an Eventbrite page. But we are also planning to record the session and making that available. So if you book your place and then can't attend on the day, you should receive a recording.
Thank you so much, Beth O'Brien, for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio. And we'll look forward to talking more about Wolf Siren, your debut novel, in the second part of this interview.